This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
So today I have with me...
Hi, I'm Lucas Dreyer.
And I am Diane McConnell. So, Lucas.
Yeah.
What have we got?
All right, so thanks for having me. Today I'm going to talk about our business here in Palmerston North and give you a little bit of a background how this whole thing eventuated and what we're doing and why it's so important in the modern healthcare system. So we are called clinical exercise physiologists, and most people know that exercise is good for you, but many don't realize that exercise can also be used as clinical treatment, prescribed treatment like medicine. And so that's the sort of population that we work with. So what is a clinical exercise physiologist or a CEP? It's a profession built around one core idea, that exercise is medicine. So we're university trained health professionals who specialize in how the body respond to exercise, not just in healthy people, but in people with chronic disease, injuries, and complex medical conditions or needs. So if a simple way to think about it, a personal trainer helps people to get fitter and stronger. A clinical exercise physiologist uses exercise to help people with medical conditions to get stronger and get better, manage the disease better in a safe and effective way. So we understand how the heart, the lungs, the muscles, metabolism, and nervous system respond to exercise. And we also understand how medications, surgery, and chronic conditions affect someone's ability to move. So we design individualized, safe, progressive exercise plans that help people manage disease, recover from surgery, and improve their quality of life. CEP, or clinical exercise physiology, is a relatively new concept here in New Zealand. When we arrived here 20 years ago from South Africa, where the profession was already at that stage really well established, we were sort of surprised that there's nothing of this sort actually happened in New Zealand. There was talk in university papers about the health benefits of exercise and working with special populations, but there was no profession. And this is a really important step to take forward if you want to, you know, get your graduates at university training. To actually move forward, you need to create a pathway, you need to create a profession, you need to create a registration framework. So over time, we actually got our heads of departments to buy into the concept, and we started a postgrad program at UCall that focused on training students in this field, and as part of that, a registration framework was put up called Clinical Exercise Physiology New Zealand. And that registration framework developed in partnership with Auckland University, Hamilton, Wintec and Hamilton, and also one of the universities in Polytechs, actually, in Christchurch. the, as a group, we then developed this registration framework. And the reason for and all medical professions have this registration for framework, where they looked at the quality of treatment, and they basically a mechanism to protect the client. It's not a status thing, as many people think. It's just a framework that's put in place to help protect the patient. So their job is to make sure that people that actually enter the profession have the necessary qualifications, have the necessary knowledge, and have the necessary experience to work with people that are at risk. So this framework was put together, and eventually we moved away from, me and my wife, we moved away from the educational sector, and we privatized and created this practice that we now run here in Palmy called Orakinetics. We're one of only a few. Some of our ex-students from UCOL practice in Pararoma and also in Wellington. There's a few places in Hamilton and a few in Auckland. So it's still an emerging profession. So why is this needed? Why does the medical community actually need a clinical exercise physiologist? And there's a number of things that I'm going to focus on here, about four, just to keep it brief. But first one is, we have an aging population, and an aging population is normally, with age come all sorts of health issues. And so it's really important that we provide something for this aging population. The second thing that goes with that is chronic diseases rising. Our healthcare system is actually flooded with people with chronic conditions. And so we're talking about stuff like heart disease, diabetes, COPD, arthritis, chronic pain, and musculoskeletal issues, low back pain, shoulders, hip pain, knee pain, and those sort of things. The third thing that also goes with the aging population is a thing that we call exercise IQ. There's lots of people walking around that have never been sporty people. And exercise IQ basically just, it's got nothing to do with intelligence. It just means you actually have never exercised in your life. You've never really been in a gym. You don't really know what to do in a gym. You feel out of place in a gym. Mm-hmm. Feel like you walk in there and you feel like, I want to get out of here. Because you feel like everyone is looking at you, and you actually know very little about sets and reps and how to progress through exercise and what exercise to do and which ones not to do. And if you're sick and have a chronic disease, or you've got a sore knee or a sore back or a hip replacement, there's certainly some exercises that you shouldn't do and should avoid, and others that you need to specifically focus on, because if you don't, you're just going to make the condition worse. And so there's need for a profession that actually helps these people, this aging population, these people with chronic disease, and these ones with no exercise IQ, to get going, to learn what to do, and to feel safe and secure, and just have that feeling that, okay, I feel I know what to do and how to go along, and I feel that I'm doing the right stuff here. I'm not embarrassed that somebody else will look at me and thinking, what is that fool doing? So just in this environment where you can go to and you can feel comfortable, and where you actually go through your exercise routine in the company of other people with similar health issues. And so creating a working, a nice exercise atmosphere is also one of the things that we consider really important in our clinic, because people, you know, they don't want to be athletes anymore. They're not training to be All Blacks or run a mile in under 4 minutes or that sort of thing, or run a marathon. That's not the aim. The aim is to actually do exercises that's safe and it's going to help with your condition. And so we also have the fourth thing that I have here is the whole thing about the 80-20 rule. And the 80-20 rule basically states that in most communities, 80% of your healthcare cost comes from 20% of the population. And the problem with this 20% of the population is that nobody caters for them in terms of long-term exercise. If you're in that group and you have a back problem or a hip replacement, you might go for a while to a physiotherapist, but they just focus on mobility and then you're done. And there's nobody that actually really then work with these people to help them with long-term exercise. And that's where the clinical exercise physiologist comes in. That's what we train for and that's what we do. So this 20%, these are people that are living with multiple chronic conditions, and the people who end up in and out of hospital, who struggle with mobility and who need long-term support. Gyms don't cater for them. Gyms cater for the younger population that want to get stronger and wants to train for competitive reasons, or just to look healthy. Or they may be the older individual that have an exercise IQ, essentially older people that have been training all their lives. The gyms cater for them. The fitness trainers are not really trained to work with disease populations. Some of them might be pretty handy in it, because they picked up stuff as they go along, but it's not really an environment where you're gonna feel safe and well cared for, because that's not what they do. It's not their job. They cater for a different part of the population. So as CEPs, we work directly with this 20%. We provide supervised continued care that keeps people stable, active, and out of hospital. And this includes, we do frequent measurements of vital signs. So when you come in, there's an assessment. And then every time you come in for exercise, we check the vitals, making sure that you're actually okay to exercise today. This can be decreased, the amount of pre-screening, as you become a regular client and as we see that you respond well on exercise. But certainly in the beginning, for those people who have heart disease, and so it's really important that we make sure they're in a good space every day before they start exercising. So we also do regular exercise tolerance testing, and that's the way that we track progress. We can show to you that you actually improved and the way that you respond on exercise. That includes an ECG, and the ECG is to monitor the heart response on exercise, so we can see if there's any abnormal responses on the ECG, and we use that for what we call symptom limit prescription. So we can see at what heart rate and at what intensity on the cyclocometer you start showing signs of abnormal heart responses, of abnormal blood pressure responses, and we use that then as an endpoint, as a point that we're not going to exceed during exercise, or if we do exceed it, we exceed it in a sort of an interval fashion. Mm-hmm. So you go in there for a minute and then you come out for 2 minutes, which is a good way to actually push for progress, to create improvement in your cardiovascular condition. So we also adjust the exercise prescription based on objective data. So all this monitoring help provides data for us, and we adjust on a regular basis based on how you respond on the exercise. And in terms of the gym exercise, the strength training, we looked at the ease at which you do your exercise, the amount of repetitions you can do, and that data is used to re-prescribe and adjust the program. So there's constant re-prescription. The focus is to make sure that the client actually do progress, but not to hurt people. And there's many ways that you can create progression. If you can't go heavier, we can do more sets or more reps. But that will only be introduced once we see you comfortable with your starting program. And so it's a program that basically aimed at making sure that people continue to exercise. They need to enjoy it, and they need to have some fun while doing it, but we also want to make sure within that they actually make progress. And progress is sometimes a misnomer for some of these clients, because they are just at that end stage of disease development that they're not going to get much better. So in that sense, just maintaining what you have or slowing down the progression and maintaining your independence is a major victory. Because I don't think there's any of us that actually wants to end up with having other people wiping your mouth, brushing your teeth, washing your hair, and all the other sanitary stuff that goes with that, because you can't do it yourself. And that's why it's so important that we actually help this people that is in this 20% category to maintain their dignity and their independence. And we have people here that's been with us for 10 years that have maintained their ability. We have people that have stopped and then 3 years or 2 years later come back worse than they were when they originally started with us.
Were you able to get them back up?
That then becomes a harder job. Now they're desperate. And so the progress is slower, and getting them back to where they were 3 years ago is sometimes almost impossible. So it is really important that once you start that you keep going and maintaining that ability. And people actually forget how bad they was before they start. That's a very common remark when you ask people when they come back is, why did you stop? That would be the response: I forgot how bad I was. And after a year or two doing nothing and being back at that, I remembered how bad I was, and I know I'm now worse. And so it is, I think one of those key concepts that people don't get is that what you do now is for those final years of your life, final months of your life, where you still want to go through that with dignity. And so we're essentially the bridge between medical treatment and everyday life. Once someone is medically stable, they still need guidance to exercise effectively and to live well. And that's where the CEP comes in. So who's our typical clients? I've got about five listed here that I'll quickly run through. Number one, our typical client is cardiac patients. So these are people that had heart attacks or stents or bypass surgery, or living with heart failure or an irregular heart rate. And who's too scared to go and exercise on their own, don't know what to do. And in most cases, these people also have musculoskeletal issues. They're either overweight or they've got a knee issue or a back issue, which prevents them from walking. So, and at a later stage, I'll talk about this whole concept that the doctors have of when they think about exercise, they think about the approach is go for a walk. A walk helps, but only if you know what you do. And for most people, just with no background in exercise, starting with a walk program is actually worse. It often makes the issue worse. Maybe not the heart issue, but other health issues like knee problems or back problems or so forth. So it's really important if you have a heart condition and you have musculoskeletal issues, that you get to a place that can take that into consideration when they prescribe. The second group that we work with is respiratory conditions, people with COPD or asthma or long-term COVID that feel breathless and by running out of breath by just doing simple tasks. Those people have a thing called oxygen theft, where the organs actually, the oxygen is channeled to the organs, the main organs, to maintain the organs with their function. And the result is that the musculoskeletal system, especially the legs, atrophy. They get smaller, they lose their bulk. And this becomes a vicious cycle. As you maintain more oxygen for the organs, the legs get weaker, exercise become harder, and it just gets worse. And so it's really important for these people with lung issues that they do strength training. And because they're scared, and because they run out of puff, and they don't really know what's the difference between just breathless due to exercise and being and having dyspnea, breathing difficulty, they are scared to exercise and they don't really know how to actually progress with the exercise. And so it's not uncommon for us to work with patients for at least a month or so just to get them to trust us. Just get them to see that what they feel is not their asthma kicking in. It's not their COPD kicking in. And it's just what happens when you exercise. There's a slight difference. And learning that difference is part of the job. The third group is the diabetes and people with metabolic conditions. Exercise is one of the strongest tools for improving glucose control. And many people with diabetes struggle with their glucose control. And so that's where we come and we guide them through that process. Then we have people with musculoskeletal issues. These are people with chronic pain, low back pain, shoulder injuries, knee or hip osteoarthritis, neck pain, or postural and movement dysfunction. Most of these people have what we call false movement patterns. And so we assess for these movement patterns and then prescribe specifically for this. So what is a false movement pattern? That's where your when you actually move your arm or your leg, you've got a primary driver called the agonist. You've got a muscle on direct opposite of that, which is the antagonist, which actually helps to control the movement.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, of course, your stabilizing muscles, muscles that sits on the side of the movements driving the action that helps to control the joint position. all muscles that works on some, like on the scapula. If I lift my arm up, the scapula actually are moved as well. And it's a 2-to-1 ratio for every 2 degrees my arm lift, my scapula move 1 degree.
The scapula being
the thing that sits in the back of your back.
Okay.
Your shoulder blades.
Yes.
Yeah, your shoulder blades. So. So that shoulder blade actually move as and there's muscles that work on them, and so a lot of shoulder injuries is a result of what we call false movement patterns, and that's where the normal synchronicity between these muscles, the agonist and the antagonist and the stabilizing muscles, that synchronicity deteriorates, and there's a disruption. And it often stems from previous injury or develops gradually due to joint stiffness caused by either lack of use or overuse. So if I've been in a job where I actually walk my whole life, I'm on my feet the whole day, then you start developing certain muscle overdevelopment and underdevelopment in other groups. That changes the position of the femur slightly rotates, that creates a narrowing of the disc space, and that leads to osteoarthritis in the knee, which then leads to a knee replacement surgery. If you identify this early enough, even if you identify it late, correcting that femur position with the right exercises can delay or prevent, in some cases, there's some good research which I will talk about maybe sometime later, a whole session on that, is some good evidence that you can actually prevent knee replacement surgery if you know what you're doing. So this is typically the type of client that we work with and the work that we do with musculoskeletal patients. Then we have joint replacement of post-surgery rehab. A lot of people think that, you know, if I go for surgery in my back, that'll magically my back pain will then be gone. Or if I go to knee replacement surgery, magically my knee pain will be gone. There's actually a lot of rehab that needs to be done afterwards. And now you've got an issue that permanently limits you from doing certain things. And you need to be aware of what you should avoid, and if you want to strengthen it, how to go about doing that in a safe way. So a long-term, because after surgery, you go to the physiotherapist for basically an early healing stage, but there's no full recovery. They just work on mobility and creating sort of reduce the swelling and reduce the pain, but the long-term recovery needs ongoing exercise with targeting specific muscle groups. And like I said, there's actually no other profession that does this, and that's why, and you look at the number of knee surgeries, knee replacement surgeries, and knee replacements, and shoulder issues that are becoming prevalent in our society with the older growing population and with people doing less and less manual work and sitting for most of the day. This becomes a real important issue for healthcare.
Thank you for listening to Manuatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.